VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Russian state news agencies are reporting ousted Syrian President Bashar Assad has arrived in Moscow and received asylum from his longtime ally. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The agencies TASS and RIA cited an unidentified Kremlin source. Assad reportedly left Syria early Sunday. RIA also cited an anonymous Kremlin source that Moscow had received guarantees from Syrian insurgents of the security of Russian military bases and diplomatic posts in Syria. I'm Karen Chamas.
U.S. President Joe Biden addressed the collapse of the Syrian government, noting there's opportunity but also risk ahead. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
At long last, the Assad regime has fallen.
In remarks at the White House, President Biden says after decades of repression,
brutalized and tortured and killed literally hundreds of thousands of innocent Syrians, the fall of the regime is a fundamental act of justice. It's a moment of historic opportunity.
But it also comes with risk.
For years, the main backers of Assad have been Iran, Hezbollah, and Russia.
The president says U.S. policy in Israel and Ukraine helped weaken the Syrian government's allies. And he says they will continue being watchful for any signs of a terrorist uprising.
We're clear-eyed about the fact that ISIS will try to take advantage of any vacuum.
He says U.S. forces have already taken preemptive strikes against ISIS camps. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The White House says Biden met with his national security team Sunday for an update on the situation in Syria. The U.S. has about 900 troops in Syria, including U.S. forces working with Kurdish allies in the opposition-held northeast to prevent any resurgence of the Islamic State group. This is VOA News. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is pushing Russian leader Vladimir Putin to act to reach an immediate ceasefire with Ukraine. Trump describes it as part of his active efforts to end the war despite being weeks from taking office. Trump, in an interview Sunday, also said he would be open to reducing military aid to Ukraine and pulling the United States out of the 30-country security alliance NATO. Analysts in New Delhi say India does not support the creation of a shared currency among the nine-nation BRICS grouping. Anjana Pazricha has a report from New Delhi.
India is not pursuing the creation of a common BRICS currency, a potential initiative that has met with strong pushback from U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. He has threatened 100% tariffs on products from the nine-member BRICS bloc if it replaces the U.S. dollar with another currency or backs an alternative to the greenback. Analysts say mistrust and differences between major BRICS members, such as India and China, are a huge stumbling block in moving ahead with a shared currency. Chintamani Mahapatra is with the Kalinga Institute of Indo-Pacific Studies.
India is not supportive of this particular initiative. Any common currency is not going to help anyone. Only the dominant countries like China ultimately will dictate. So it is very difficult to develop a consensus to have a common currency.
Talk of a BRICS currency gained some momentum in 2022 after the U.S. imposed sanctions on Russia following the Ukraine war and growing tensions between the West and China. Anjana Pasricha, VOA News, New Delhi.
New York City's mayor says authorities have identified the man suspected of killing United Health executive Brian Thompson. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams was quoted by the New York Post as saying police were withholding the suspect's name for now to deny him any advantage. Adams was quoted as saying, "We revealed his face," referring to security camera photos and video released after the murder. He added, quote, "We're going to reveal who he is and we're going to bring him to justice." 50-year-old Thompson, CEO of United Health's insurance unit, was shot in the back on Wednesday morning in what police described as a targeted attack by a masked assailant lying in wait. The murder occurred just before the company's annual investor conference at a Manhattan hotel. A massive manhunt is underway after police say the gunman immediately fled into Central Park.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bautier in Washington. Today is Monday, December 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ghana's ruling party candidate concedes in Saturday's presidential election.
I've just called His Excellency John Dramani Mahama to congratulate him as president-elect of the Republic of Ghana.
Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan reshuffles her cabinet. Doctors want urgent action on DRC's yet-to-be-identified disease outbreak. Both sides of Liberia's divided House of Representatives are claiming victory in Friday's Supreme Court ruling about the speakership.
We have been embroiled in a squabble. That is not good for the country. That is not good for our people. I think the key thing now is to return, do our in-house fixes, come to work, and then we'll see where we go from there.
And Biden and Trump address regime collapse in Syria. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ghana's ruling New Patriotic Party candidate, Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia, concedes in the presidential election ahead of the Electoral Commission announcing the result and pledged to support the transition. VOA's Paul Ndiho is in Accra and filed this report.
Ghana's Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia has conceded defeat in the recent presidential election, expressing his commitment to support the transition process. At a press conference in Accra, Ghana, Bawumia acknowledged that Ghana has chosen change, signifying a smooth handover to incoming president, President-elect John Dramani Mahama.
I have just called His Excellency John Dramani Mahama to congratulate him as president-elect of the Republic of Ghana. The people of Ghana have spoken. The people have voted for change at this time. And we respect that decision with all humility.
Within minutes of his concession speech, supporters of President-elect John Mahama celebrated outside the party headquarters of his National Democratic Congress Party, NDC.
As news started trickling in that Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia has conceded defeat, people started rushing to the NDC headquarters to express their excitement. As you can see in the background, there are a lot of people. The noise is unbearable, but people are excited to be here that their candidate has finally won.
For me, this win is very significant, also because I am a woman. I'm a young woman. This means that first time in the history of Ghana, we are going to have a female vice president in the name of Excellency Professor Jenana Opokwajuman.
From our incoming president, the Excellency John Dramani Mahama, is to provide employment to the youth, because there are lots of unemployment and we are not getting jobs to do. So we are excited he's coming to change the whole scenario.
First of all, the nation is under pressure. Why? Because the president who has been defeated is doing some things which cannot be favored the masses of Ghanaians. Now we have someone who will take care for every area of our life. First,
I am so happy to witness this day. You know, the 8 years of MPP government, they have really frustrated with the youth. Corruption, nepotism, I don't know, they just talk to anybody anyhow. So I'm so happy to witness today. I'm so happy.
The Ghanaians are talking, and we have elected him again back to sit on the throne to redeem Ghana, because we are too much tired of everything that we have been doing. We don't have money, we can't work.
As you can see, Ghanaians are happy. The election was Ghana against the MP. The people voted against corruption, impunity, insecurity. And you can see, we are so excited with the turn of events.
Mahama, 56, is making a historic comeback after losing the presidency in 2016. His win is notable as it marks the first time a former president has reclaimed the office in Ghana's Fourth Republic, established in 1992.
Paul Ndiho, VOA News, at NDC headquarters in Accra, Ghana.
Both sides of Liberia's divided House of Representatives are claiming victory in last Friday's Supreme Court ruling about the month-long dispute over the speakership. One group of lawmakers claiming to be the majority elected a new speaker to replace the current speaker, Jay Fonati Kofa. The group has accused Kofa of alleged conflict of interest. In its ruling last Friday, the Supreme Court avoided siding with one side or the other, saying that the legislature cannot have legal sitting without the speaker and the majority. And about the speaker, Kofa tells me that the court's decision is a victory for him and the rule of law.
We are very elated at the Supreme Court ruling. We believe it was clear. At the end of the day, the Supreme Court said the definition of plenary, which is the body of the House of Representatives that make decisions, has to conform to Article 33, which is the majority to form a quorum, and Article 49, which is the speaker as the presiding officer. You cannot have one without the other, is what the court said. And any act or sitting that does not fall in conformity with that is ultra vires, or what the court called outside the scope of the law.
But the other side of the House of Representatives is saying that you are no longer recognized as the speaker?
Oh, but I think my colleagues will say anything they want to say that suits their understanding, but I'm telling you what the law and what the Supreme Court said, and I advise you and advise my colleagues to proceed to talk to good lawyers who understand constitutional law.
Speaker, let me ask you, why have you? Because the main criticism of the other members of the House of Representatives is that you are conflicted and that they don't want you to be speaker anymore because of that. What's your reaction to the allegations they are making?
So I think you can stand in my face and make those allegations to me as it's required by the rules and not try to go behind my back to develop that. I'm willing to address those charges in the correct forum. They are completely bogus, but that's not my concentration right now. My concentration is developing a mechanism so we can have plenary next week to begin to dispose of the Liberian people's business.
Mr. Speaker, how much impact do you think this whole process is having on the members of the House of Representatives doing the Liberian people's business?
Although it has significant impact on us doing the Liberian people's business, there has been nothing done since we returned to session October 15th, absolutely no work has been done. We have been embroiled in a squabble. That is not good for the country. That is not good for our people. I think the key thing now is to return, do our in-house fixes, come to work, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Jay Fonati Kofa is the embattled speaker of the divided Liberian House of Representatives. He spoke with me from the capital, Monrovia. Representative Richard Kuhn, elected as the new speaker by the majority bloc in the Liberian House of Representatives, says last Friday's Supreme Court ruling favors his side because the court rejected almost everything that Speaker Jay Fonati Kofa petitioned the court for. Kuhn tells me that his group continues to do the work of the House of Representatives.
The Supreme Court ruling, from all indication, I would say is in our favor. The reason is that what the former prayed for from the Supreme Court, all of these things they were denied. He prayed for our assembly, they were legal. He also prayed for the issue of the budget that was given to us. He said we hijacked the budget. He also prayed for dismissal and the suspension of some committee member that we restructured due to the new phenomenon. The other thing he prayed for, he could not carry from the Supreme Court. So we feel that the Supreme Court for sure is just telling us you people go back and handle your own problem, because there's uncertain explanations in relation to Article 33 on the basis of the minority or forcing the majority. There's no clear explanation or process as to how it's being effectuated. So basically, all these things that you pray for from the Supreme Court, they were denied. So we think we are victorious on the basis of what we've done, and we know we follow all of the rules and regulations to remove him as a speaker.
So what do you say to the Supreme Court when it says that any sittings or actions by members of the legislature not in conformity with the intent of Articles 33 and 49 of the Constitution is illegal? Are you not acting illegally?
No, not really. We already have a quorum. We're operating legally in the chamber. it's in capital. So definitely all of our city, especially during the first time we sent to the Supreme Court, the same business of our city, the Supreme Court said that this city is very legal. So nothing in it that was done illegally, because if they ask for the therapy as they quoted, we have the majority, they would do a verbal business.
The speaker says he's looking forward to you people returning to the status quo. What do you say to that?
Oh, like in the case of where we were already, the relates to the crisis, that we're going back to. Then I was still going to do operating from the joint chamber, and then we urge our colleagues from the other side to join us, because we've got to continue in the laboratory work. For them, they are actually not doing anything. They only go to the chamber when they don't constitute COVID, they leave and go work. So we bring laboratory work in consultation with government officials that are coming to give one or two answers to some query that we have, and also communicating with the Senate. Because actually, if we do not work, or decide not to work within 5 days, the assembly will be operating illegally. So it is our assembly that got its sitting is illegal.
Representative Richard Coon says he was elected by the majority bloc in the divided Liberian House of Representatives as the new speaker. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, December 9. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan has reshuffled with her cabinet, affecting several ministries and agencies. Neville Mina is the Secretary General of the Tanzania Editors Forum. He tells me that one of the significant changes involves the merger of the Ministry of Information, Communication and Information Technology and the Ministry of Culture, Arts and Sports.
It's very true that the president has just made a minor reshuffle in her cabinet, where the Minister of Information has been affected. This means that the information department has been moved from the parent ministry to the sports and the cultural affairs. This means that we have gone back to the former Minister of Information, Cultural and Sports. We used to have that ministry earlier. But from our demand, the minister was just merged with the Communication and Information Technology. But now the president has taken back the information department, merged with Cultural and Sports to form the Ministry of Information, Culture and Sports. And then has appointed Paramagamba Kabudi, the professor, to be the minister of that ministry. The communication part of it and the ICT remained as an independent ministry, where innovation aspect has been added on it, and the former Minister of Information and ICT remained to oversee that ministry.
It's been very difficult to get response whenever you want to speak to someone from the government, Ministry of Information, or the police. What do you make of the changes in these two areas?
It might be the move of the government, maybe to have someone who can be a spokesperson, but not really to be a spokesperson effectively, but maybe who can safeguard their interests, because always the government have some interest when it comes to which information need to be delivered to the public. For us, journalists in Tanzania, we have no choice because, okay, the president have that mandate of appointing anyone to be the minister or to reorganize and have a ministry which can serve different purposes. But for us, again, to divide the communication, technology and innovation to be taken away from the former Minister of Information, for us, it finds a bit difficult for us to work with two ministers at the same time, because now radio, television and the online TV, they're going to be under the Minister of Communication. And the newspapers, they'll remain under the Minister of Information. And what does it mean? That means the Minister of Information will be also overseeing issues in television and radio when it comes to the content. So you can see how it will be cumbersome for we journalists or media organizations to deal with two ministries at the same time.
Nebo Mina is the secretary for the Tanzania Editors Forum. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Africa's Center for Disease Control and Prevention, also known as Africa CDC, says it is battling to identify a new disease in the Democratic Republic of Congo that has claimed at least 79 lives and affected hundreds more. Columbus Mambunga reports from Zimbabwe's capital.
Dr. Jean Kaseya, Director General of Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, told reporters from the Democratic Republic of Congo that his organization is working with Kinshasa authorities to identify the disease and its causes. Kaseya made it clear that he wants fast results from doctors, researchers, and medical organizations.
How can we accept to have 5-6 weeks of delay? It's just because the surveillance system is weak. We are still waiting to know what is going on. We don't want to see again another disease that will take 4-6 weeks before official notification. Regarding this disease X, we say we are waiting for the outcome from the lab, either tomorrow, to know what is going on.
The disease was identified late October in the Panzi district of Kwango province on the border with Angola. The World Health Organization's Regional Office for Africa said Friday it is sending experts to help investigate. The disease causes flu-like symptoms. WHO says the cause is unknown, but it will be investigating influenza, COVID-19, malaria, or measles as possibilities. Dr. Nomen Matara, Secretary General of the Southern African Association of Doctors for Human Rights, urged people in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the region to remain calm but improve their hygienic practices.
We also encourage the governments to strengthen their surveillance at ports of entry so that unusual illnesses can be reported to health authorities. We also call for a coordinated approach led by the African CDC so that we can quickly identify this disease and prevent further loss of lives through a global outbreak.
Dr. Akili Kishugi Francis, the coordinator of a Kinshasa-based NGO, Action Asante, says stronger action is needed, especially when symptoms of the disease manifest.
This includes rigorous hand hygiene, drinking water, the isolation of suspected cases, and compliance with the instructions given by medical teams present.
Sufferers of the disease also suffer headaches and breathing difficulties. The Africa CDC says the disease is affecting mainly young people, many of them children under 5 years old. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
U.S. President Joe Biden and President-elect Donald Trump reacted Sunday to the collapse of Bashar Assad's regime in Syria. Given its strategic interest in the Middle East, the U.S. is expected to keep a close eye on what lies ahead in Syria. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
From the White House, U.S. President Joe Biden addressed the collapse of the Bashar al-Assad regime in Syria by a rebel offensive.
At long last, the Assad regime has fallen. This regime brutalized and tortured and killed literally hundreds of thousands of innocent Syrians. The fall of the regime is a fundamental act of justice. It's a moment of historic opportunity for the long-suffering people of Syria to build a better future for their proud country.
Biden also outlined several steps the U.S. plans to take in light of the changes on the ground, including working closely with regional allies.
First, we'll support Syria's neighbors, including Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, and Israel, should any threat arise from Syria during this period of transition.
President-elect Donald Trump reacted Sunday to the latest developments in Syria, posting on his Truth social media platform, quote, "Assad is gone. He has fled his country. His protector, Russia, led by Vladimir Putin, was not interested in protecting him any longer." A day earlier, Trump posted, "Syria is a mess, but it's not our friend, and the United States should have nothing to do with it. This is not our fight." The celebratory mood on the ground in Syria by those who opposed Assad shouldn't distract from the immediate needs that must be tended to, experts warn. Former Defense Secretary under Trump, Mark Esper, shared his opinion Sunday on CNN's State of the Union show.
There's going to be the humanitarian aid concern, which I think we and other countries in the UN will have to address. I think secondly, as you mentioned, is the chemical weapons and other military capabilities. We do not want those to get into the wrong hands.
Given its strategic interests and partnerships in the region, analysts expect the United States will keep a close eye on who ends up taking power in Syria after Assad and the direction they take the country in. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with rugby as South Africa's Springbok Sevens side produced a magical performance in the Cape Town Sevens final, down in France 26-14 to win their first home final in 9 years on Sunday night. For the Blitzbox, it capped a magical weekend where they survived the extra jeopardy of a flawed tournament structure to power their way through every challenge and produce some of the finest rugby seen in a green and gold Sevens jersey. This was the first time they had been in a final since 2020 and the first time they had won their home tournament since 2015, stopping a run of disappointment that stretched on way too long. In tennis news, the Nigerian national tennis team will start their Davis Cup World Cup 2 playoffs campaign next year with a tie against South Africa from the 1st to the 2nd of February 2025. It will be the South Africa squad's first tie since the lost 3-1 to Lebanon in their playoff clash in Cairo in September. The match will be hosted on the hard court of the Grand Clough Tennis Stadium in Pretoria. Nigeria, who are 25 places below South Africa in the Davis Cup rankings, qualify for the World Cup 2 playoffs after emerging from a 6-team Group 3 tournament in Abuja earlier this year. The winning team in the World Cup 2 playoff clash between South Africa and Nigeria will compete in a World Cup Group 2 tie in September, while the losing side will compete in a regional Group 3 event later next year. In athletics, Uganda's Lois Chikwemue delivered a stunning performance at the Great Chapasita Cross Country, a World Athletics Cross Country Tour gold meeting held near Eldoret, Kenya at the weekend. The 17-year-old dominated a women's 10-kilometer race, crossing the finish line in 34 minutes, 32 seconds, more than 80 seconds ahead of her closest competitor. The African steeplechase champion has now added to her laurels her first senior gold level cross title to the team bronze she won with Uganda at the Belgrade 2024 World Cross and the 3,000-meter steeplechase silver at the 2025 World Under-20 Championships. And finally, in football news, Al-Hilal Omdurman secured a crucial 2-1 victory over TP Mazembe in the second Group A match of the CAF Champions League played on Sunday night. Played at the Stade Chieka Old Bouidia in Mauritania, the Sudanese Giants delivered a spirited performance to maintain their perfect start to the group stage. In other results, Joliba AC and Egyptian side Pyramids battled to a goalless draw in their second Group D encounter, while Mamelodi Sundowns secured a valuable away point in Group B after they were held by AS FAR of Morocco 1-1 at the El Abidi Stadium in El Jadida on Saturday night. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, December 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.